Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. This morning we're reading from page 279, chapter 18. And Shashi will be elucidating. Before we start, I need to give some background for some of you. This section begins with discussion of the Pandavas and Queen Kunti, Queen Draupadi. So it's important to know who they are. Who would like to tell who are the Pandavas? Who would like to explain who are the Pandavas? Ankush? Yep, the five sons of Pandu, who was the former king. Yes, you remember in the two chapters back, the four chapters back, Krishna was concerned about their well-being. So who did he send to check on them? Akura, right. So the Pandu died, and Kunti, his widow, was left with these five sons who were all, they were all great devotees of Krishna. And so Krishna was very concerned about their care. They were being mistreated by their uncle, Dhritarashtra, and his son, Duryodhana. So Krishna had some concern about them, sent Akura. And this is all taking place prior to the battle of Kurukshetra. So at that time, the Pandavas and the Kauravas fought and annihilated these huge armies. So that was fulfilling Krishna's ultimate purpose in his descent. But at this time, they are enjoying a brief, happy period when their cousins, they won't give them the kingdom to which they're entitled, but they gave them the desert part of it and said, you can have this section. So they went there to this desert, and by the help of Vishvakarma, built this beautiful city, Indraprastha, the city of Indra. So they're enjoying their kingdom there, and Krishna is in Dwarka. So now they have a kind of a respite in all the strife, and are enjoying a nice period of happy relationship. So this is where we pick up the story. Chapter 18, Krishna's Queens. Some time elapsed. The Pandavas, so cherished by the Lord, survived the plots against them, and their kingdom was restored. When they built Indraprastha as the new seat of their throne, Lord Krishna went to visit them, as he was always prone. When Kunti's five outstanding sons saw Krishna had arrived, they rose as if five senses of a lifeless man revived. To see his loving face filled them with overwhelming joy. As they embraced the Lord, each felt his problems were destroyed. Lord Krishna paid obeisances, as Vedic text direct, to Yudhisthira and Bhima, who, as elders, earned respect. He hugged his equal, Arjuna, his peer and lifelong friend, and took the praise the younger twins were happy to extend. The Pandavas' Queen Draupadi was chaste beyond reproach. She dearly loved Lord Krishna, whom she timidly approached. His traveling companions, meanwhile, took their honored seats. Queen Kunti then arrived, and all the greetings were complete. Queen Kunti loved her nephew, who she'd longed to see for years. Emotion choked her throat and filled her eyes with blissful tears. Since she had lost her husband, life had caused her much distress. Remembering Lord Krishna's help, she made this short address. My dear Lord Krishna, in our grief you've given us such help. You kindly sent your father, and at last you've come yourself. You're everyone's well-wisher. You treat everyone the same, and yet you please your devotees and add to their acclaim. Queen Kunti's son, King Yudhisthira, continued on this theme. By grace we have your presence and your help in our regime. Though we are fools, please stay with us until the rains have passed. The Lord complied, and kingdom-wide delight was unsurpassed. Since warriors are allowed to hunt by Vedic moral codes, Arjuna drove Lord Krishna through the kingdom's forest roads. His chariot held mystic weapons, useful in pursuit of rhinos, tigers, boar, and deer the pair would stalk and shoot. Arjuna's servants packed the corpses, carried them away, and used them all for sacrifice. So doing, all the prey gained new and better bodies through the power of the priests who'd consummate the sacrifice and benefit the beasts. Arjuna, feeling thirsty, saw the Jamuna nearby. Lord Krishna came and drank with him till both were satisfied. Just then they saw a lovely girl with charming face and hips. At Krishna's hint, Arjuna went to question her like this. Who are you, lovely lady? Is this place your native land? Your father, is he with you? Are you here by his command? Who is your father? Do you seek a husband in these woods? Please help us understand things so we see you as we should. The woman named Kalindi said, My father is the one that you would know as Surya, or the god who rules the sun. He built for me a mansion in the Jamuna nearby, where I reside and spend my time just as you have implied. My husband will be Vishnu, or I'll have no mate at all. To satisfy the Lord, with whom I've always been enthralled, I put myself through penance and divine austerity in hopes he will be satisfied and someday marry me. This sweet account, which Krishna knew, was all he had to hear. Kalindi on his chariot, he went to Yudhisthira in splendid Indraprastha, which the Lord had helped to build by calling Vishvakarma, whose construction is most skilled. Lord Krishna stayed for weeks, until, with matters to attend, he went back home to Dwarka with fiancé and friends. And then, when every planet showed auspicious qualities, he wed Kalindi lavishly and pleased his devotees. Satya and more. Duryodhana detested all the Pandava's success and gathered allies who imbibed his poisoned consciousness. Two brothers named Vinda and Anuvinda held such hate, but Krishna wed their sister, which they could not tolerate. The sister, Mitravinda, in the classic Vedic way, prepared to choose her husband on her Swayamvara day. Her heart was set on Krishna, which her brothers found obscene, but when the Lord rode off with her, they could not intervene. Then Krishna heard that Nagnajit of Kosala decreed Satya, his lovely daughter, would be his who could succeed in taming 7 vicious bulls. Forever discontent, these bulls had blades for horns and couldn't stand a warrior's scent. Lord Krishna knew King Nagnajit and with a massive force went promptly to his friend to meet this challenge at its source. King Nagnajit, delighted to see Krishna, left his throne and gave Lord Krishna more respect than he had ever shown. Lord Krishna offered his respects. Satya, the lovely maid, observed her latest suitor and immediately prayed, As I have kept my vows as well as any woman can, may Providence arrange that somehow I may wed this man. If Goddess Lakshmi, Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and the rest of all the gods and goddesses were here, they would request the dust of Krishna's lotus feet. To save humanity, he incarnates himself like this. May he be pleased with me. King Nagnajit first worshipped Krishna, seated him, and said, What can I do for you, my lord, but simply bow my head? Lord Krishna, smiling from the royal throne he'd been allowed, addressed the king in pleasing words that rumbled like a cloud. The sages say that kings like you and me, with men and land, should not engage in begging, nor extend an empty hand. And yet, to build our friendship, if the match can be arranged, I ask to wed your daughter, though I've nothing to exchange. The king replied, My lord, to see she'd wed a man like you, I've bound her to a hero's task I'm certain you can do. These 7 wild bulls have broken many suitors' bones. Defeat them, and my daughter shall belong to you alone. The Lord then pulled his belt, and seven Krishnas came in view. Each one fought with a bull until the beasts were all subdued. As Krishna coalesced again and tied the bulls with ease, Satya saw how, despite his other wives, she could be pleased. King Nandajit then gave Satya to Krishna with delight and held a wedding festival with joyful Vedic rites. Satya, her mother, and the court were filled with ecstasy, and common people shared the mood of great festivity. The mighty Nagnajit bestowed a dowry for the bride that reached such great proportions it could not be quantified. The multitudes of maidens, cows, and elephants surpassed its hordes of men and chariots, which in themselves were vast. The king sent this beloved couple off with much remorse aboard a royal chariot amidst a mighty force. This proved to be prescient, for on the road, in fact, a slew of jealous, disappointed rival kings attacked. Before, the seven vicious bulls had overwhelmed these kings. Now Arjuna and other soldiers managed the same thing. They parried every king's attack with fortitude and skill, as lions drive off jackals who attempt to steal their kill. Lord Krishna, who ruled Dwarka and all the Yadu clan, returned with his new bride and her vast dowry to his land. As citizens applauded them, with boundless happiness, Satya and Krishna entered their palatial home in bliss. But Krishna wasn't finished. He had many wives to wed, for he expands in countless forms, as we've already said. Bhadra came as a gift, then Lakshmana by strength of force, and Krishna married 16,000 others in due course. 16,000 queens. Said Vishnuratta, how did he wed 16,000 queens? I've heard that Boma kidnapped and imprisoned them unseen, and when they were only princesses. Please tell me what occurred when Krishna killed that scoundrel and released the captive girls. The villain Boma stole King Indra's mother's jeweled rings, umbrellas of Varuna, and still other godly things. When Indra asked Lord Krishna for assistance, he replied that he would go at once, with Satyabhama at his side. Aloft on Garuda, Lord Krishna and his fearless wife flew off to see Boma, who was causing all this strife. They found his kingdom fully ringed by sharply slicing wire, a slew of deadly weapons, and a moat of blazing fire. Lord Krishna's spinning disk broke up the moat and doused the fire. Lord Krishna's shining sword sliced through the labyrinth of wire. Lord Krishna's arrows caused the demon's weaponry to fall, allowing Krishna's club to smash the daunting forest walls. When Krishna blew his victory conch, he broke the magic spell protecting Boma's fort and all his soldiers' hearts as well. It also roused a sleeping beast of five ferocious heads named Mura, who had made the fortress moat his waterbed. The horrible Mura blazed brighter than the sun. His five massive mouths roared and frightened everyone. Like venom, some poisonous snake reared back and spat. His trident flew straight at Garuda's feathered back. Lord Krishna's first arrows broke up the trident's flight. His next arrow struck Mura's faces left and right. The furious demon then hurled his deadly club, expecting to leave his foe crushed and streaming blood. Lord Krishna threw his club, abruptly smashing both. Then Mura, upset, raised his arms and screamed an oath. He rushed at his foe to destroy him with his fists, but Krishna lopped off his five heads with his sharp disk. Deprived of its heads, Mura's corpse splashed in the moat, as hilltops are felled by Lord Indra's thunderbolt. His seven sons joined in their father's failed assault, till Krishna's sharp arrows brought that fight to a halt. On seeing his guardians thoroughly destroyed, the demon, Bama, furious, instantly deployed his elephants, soldiers, and all his entourage to bury their foe in an unrestrained barrage. Garuda flew Krishna and Satyabhama high. They looked like a cloud bank with lightning in the sky. Lord Krishna rained arrows on Boma's vicious troops. Their pierced limbs and mounts made the field a bloody soup. Garuda swooped down on the elephant array and, using his talons, drove all of them away. his elephant army destroyed and overthrown, the demon Bhama stood before Krishna all alone. Then Bhima's sharp spear struck Garuda harmlessly, who looked like an elephant tickled by a flea. As frustrated Bhoma prepared his trident next, Lord Krishna's sharp chakra went sailing through his neck. The gem-studded head of the demon hit the ground. The god showered flowers and made triumphant sounds. The goddess of earth, Bhumi, brought the stolen goods, gave gifts, and said prayers to Lord Krishna as she stood. Respects to you, my lord, who dwells in every single heart. You bring your disc to help like this. You play so many parts. Primeval, all-pervading one, creator absolute, my boundless lord, I offer my obeisances to you. The lotus-like depression on your abdomen adorns the lovely lotus garland, Krishna, draped about your form. Your cooling lotus glances make the imagery complete, including all the lotus marks embellishing your feet. You craft the mode of passion when you bring about creation, and then the mode of ignorance when you want devastation. As everything's maintainer and enjoyer, you are linked to all of your creation, yet you're separate and distinct. Illusion makes us think that fire, water, earth, and air, the mind and senses, gods, and all of which we are aware, are independent, separate units, standing on their own. In fact, they are within you and belong to you alone. I gave birth to this Bhoma, yet his sins disgusted me. My lord, here is his son, who has been frightened terribly. Please place your lotus hand, which conquers sin, upon his head. Protect him, please, for you can shelter those beset with dread. Content with Bhumi's humble prayers, Krishna blessed the boy. He then entered the palace evil Bhoma had enjoyed. Besides the demon's treasures, jewels, silks, and other things, were many kidnapped maidens, all the daughters of great kings. These 16,100 princesses concurred. The handsome man who freed them was the one they wished to serve. May providence allow this man to marry me, they prayed, as each one thought of Krishna in her own distinctive way. The Lord provided every princess spotless new attire and sent them all to Dwarka to fill their heart's desire. He also sent off horses, treasure, elephants, and such that Bhoma had collected, and indeed he'd stolen much. With this encounter finished, Krishna took his wife and left to take back to the heavens all the gods had lost to theft. When Satyabhama asked him for a parijata tree that Indra grew in heaven, Krishna instantly agreed. The most exquisite flowers issue from this famous tree. But Indra cried, "It's mine!" So Krishna took it forcefully. Although he'd gained Lord Krishna's help and bowed to him as well, this Indra was ungrateful. May his riches go to hell. Lord Krishna, back in Dwarka, assumed a separate form for each and every princess. When their weddings were performed, each one had her own palace too. What ordinary man could even dream of doing things that God, Lord Krishna, can? Extraordinary Krishna, who cannot be understood, led household life with every wife as any husband would. His smiling, joking wives exchanged with him a mood of love that left Brahma and other gods bewildered up above. 100 servants waited, but the queens had such a taste to rub their husband's feet or cool his head with sandal paste, or dress his hair, or bring him garlands, gifts, and pan to chew, that all the servants had to find some other work to do. Rukmini faints. One evening, Krishna lay, relaxed, on Rukmini's soft bed. Her maidservant stood waiting as she fanned his handsome head. This calm domestic scene obscured the cause of every cause, the universal Lord who plays along with human laws. Effulgent gems lit up the room, as did the ruddy moon. The lattice windows let in light and scents from fragrant blooms. Fresh jasmine garlands in the room drew swarms of humming bees. Lord Krishna lay on milk-white pillows, seeming quite at ease. Queen Rukmini served Krishna with a jeweled yak-tail fan that made a gentle breeze while in her graceful, bangled hand. Her ankle bracelets tinkled, and the necklace on her chest grew reddened by the kumkum from her sari-covered breasts. Lord Krishna knew that Goddess Lakshmi, ruler of all wealth, had taken this enchanting form to serve her lord herself. Her jewels and the gently curling hair upon her head adorned a joyous, brilliant face. Lord Krishna smiled and said, "So many kings sought you, my dear, each one a god on earth, endowed with power, kindness, beauty, strength, and huge net worth. Your brother brought such kings, like Shishupal, for your review. Why did you choose a minion such as me to marry you? In fear of all those kings, O lovely one, I left my throne to hide here in the sea, where enemies leave me alone. A woman often suffers when she stays with men like me, who act in some unstable way and flaunt society. I own nothing material, nor do my devotees. The wealthy rarely find a good excuse to follow me. Moreover, equals wed each other. That's how it should be. When greaters marry lessers, though, they live in misery. Because you failed to realize this, you chose to marry me, a person praised by beggars who misjudge his qualities. You need a first-class royal husband, capable and blessed, to help you realize happiness in this life and the next. Jarasandha and Shishupal and Shalva dislike me, as does Rukmi, your elder brother. Clearly, you can see, I carried you away to set them down a notch or two, humiliating bullies, as I always love to do. A man like me cares nothing for his children, wives, or wealth, for he is always satisfied, complete within himself. I don't do much externally. Like some unnoticed light, I quietly observe and witness all within my sight. Because she was accompanied and cared for by the Lord, Queen Rukmini had thought herself especially adored. These statements from Lord Krishna, though, shut down her subtle pride. She'd never heard such words from him. Her heart shook and she cried. The stricken Rukmini choked up and couldn't make a sound. Her tears were stained with makeup, and her toenail scratched the ground. Her fan abruptly clattered as she fainted to the floor, as if she were a plantain tree sent sprawling by a storm. Lord Krishna joked with Rukmini to stir her loving wrath, but her great love invoked this unexpected aftermath. Displaying his four-handed form, the Lord picked up his mate, caressed her lovely face, and set her scattered tresses straight. Lord Krishna's wife misread his jokes, for she was deeply chaste. He wiped her eyes and tear-stained breast, and warmly they embraced. Compassionate for Rukmini and her bewildered mind, the expert Krishna spoke again, his tone supremely kind. "You need not be displeased with me for speaking in this way. I spoke in jest to test your love and see what you would say. I long to see the corners of your smiling lips turn down, your eyes shoot angry glances, and your forehead knit a frown. The greatest pleasure one enjoys in worldly household life is spending time and making jokes with his beloved wife. Oh, timid, temperamental love, despite my best attempt, I couldn't bring about your rage, nor stir your harsh contempt." At this point, Rukmini grew calm, and clearly understood this joking Krishna wouldn't leave her as she feared he would. Her glances at her husband's face, affectionate and shy, the charming, lovely Rukmini extended this reply. "You've spoken nothing but the truth, lotus-eyed beloved. I am unsuitable for you, the almighty Godhead. You rule the demigods who start and complete creation, while fools treat common girls like me to their admiration. Since Maya rules this world, you lay down within the ocean of every living heart, awaiting their lost devotion. You left the throne of Mathura, for, in my opinion, you and your servants do not care for mundane dominion. It's true you flaunt society, for it simply stands on the beauty, the beastly joys that you and your devotees abandon. It's true that you own nothing. Everything is within you. The gods obey and follow you, yet the rich resent you. It's true the ordinary man wants a perfect marriage, and its accoutrements that your devotees disparage. A couple locked in common lust must enjoy and suffer. The wise give up that life and seek you above all others. Some see your devotees as beggars who have no money. In fact, you've made their former lives appear unbecoming. The best of kings go to the woods, giving up their empires, and never feel they could desert you for someone higher. I married you instead of Indra and other highbrows, whose plans lay crushed by time itself, which comes from your eyebrows. You do not fear my other suitors. In fact, they fear you. Like jackals flee before a lion, they won't come near you. The fragrance of your lotus feet offers liberation, a scent that shows all other men as mere imitations. When death awaits and fills the heart with a sense of terror, to disregard your feet would be a colossal error. You suit me perfectly and fill all my heart's desires. You give this vagrant soul the shelter that she requires. Those other kings can wed a girl who neglects your splendor and live like oxen, slave, or donkeys as they attend her. Such kings are simply living corpses with fleshy covers, a frame with whiskers, nails, and hairs, someone calls their lover. These foolish women hug a bag full of bile and feces, the mucus, air, and bloody bones of the human species. You're pleased within yourself, so your glances rarely grace me, yet loving you will surely save and resuscitate me. Despite my arguments against all that you were saying, I am a woman after all, and could end up straying. Lord Krishna then exclaimed, "My saintly princess, all my words were spoken to elicit the expressions I just heard. You'll surely gain the blessings that will set your spirit free, for you are ever faithful and my spotless devotee. My sinless wife, you've shown such love and perfect chastity that even my disturbing words fell off you harmlessly. Some people pray to me for better family situations, despite the fact that I could give them endless liberation. Dear love, those people who attain me are quite ill-fated if they choose riches when they could have been liberated. Such worldly gains are found in hell, which is surely fitting, for hell indeed is where such people will end up sitting. While wicked, selfish women pander to each temptation, your faithful service has assured you of liberation. I should have known my teasing words never could deceive you. In all my other palaces, no wife supersedes you. By simply hearing news of me, who had never met you, you disregarded other kings trying hard to wed you. Courageously, you sent a note through your trusted sources, requesting me to rescue you on my fastest horses. When I did not respond at once, you were so dejected, you planned to kill the body so many kings requested. Such great devotion surely merits reciprocation, yet what have I to offer you but appreciation?" The self-contained Lord Krishna thus enjoyed a repartee by joking with his wife in an extraordinary way. He mimicked, in this palace, common men in household spell, and in his 16,000 other palaces as well. The death of Rukmi. Each one of Krishna's many queens thought she was his most dear, for Krishna stayed with her all day, or so it would appear. And every youthful queen bore him 10 sons in course of time, each one as handsome as the Lord and equally sublime. Enchanted by Lord Krishna's features, charming words, and thoughts, each gorgeous wife would try to stir his passion, but could not. Their intimacy ever fresh, their glances ripe with love, each wife enjoyed a husband who eludes the gods above. 100 servants waited, but the queens had such a taste to rub their husband's feet and cool his brow with sandal paste and make his bed and set his hairstyle, garlands, dress, and jewels, that all the servants had to find some other work to do. Lord Krishna and Rukmini had a grandson, Aniruddha. Queen Rukmi's daughter's son, by Krishna's eldest son, Pradyumna. Why did, you ask, Rukmi allow his hated rival's son to wed his daughter? Listen, I'll explain why this was done. The daughter named Rukmavati was sought by many men. Her secret choice, Pradyumna, though, defeated all of them. Rukmi gave his approval, though reluctantly, because his love for Rukmini surpassed his hate for his in-laws. The couple wed and celebrated in Rukmi's domain. Obliged by etiquette, both Balaram and Krishna came. Rukmi's puffed-up associates gave him this bad advice. Why not embarrass Balaram by beating him at dice? The match began with wagers of 10,000 coins of gold. Rukmi prevailed, and all his wicked friends could not withhold their pleasure seeing Balaram subjected to this grief. Kalinga's king laughed loud and long, exposing all his teeth. Rukmi then bet 100,000 coins to up the fun. Lord Balaram accepted, and this time his numbers won. Rukmi, however, cheated. He picked up the dice and cried, "Aha! I've won again! Good luck is surely on my side." Lord Balaram was trembling like the sea on full moon day. He bet 100 million coins and dared Rukmi to play. When Balaram again prevailed, Rukmi stood up and screamed, "I won! Let all these witnesses confirm what they have seen." The witnesses, Rukmi's dishonest friends, of course, all lied. Then, suddenly, an unembodied voice rang through the sky. "Rukmi has lied, for Balaram has fairly won this match." Though destiny was calling him, Rukmi was too attached. Rukmi ignored the voice. He laughed at Balaram and said, "You forest people can't play dice. Go tend your cows instead. The sports of dice and archery and other things we do are meant for kings like us, and not for cowherds such as you." Insulted and defrauded by Rukmi, Lord Balaram, provoked enough to set aside his usual aplomb, surrounded by the wedding guests in festive moods of love, struck dead the thieving Rukmi with his swift, unerring club. Rukmi's companions, warriors all, abruptly lost their nerve and fled in all directions when they saw what had occurred. Lord Balaram's ferocious club left them in bloody grief. Kalinga's king, the one who laughed, was struck and lost his teeth. Lord Krishna neither cheered nor raged at Balaram's assault. He knew Rukmini loved Rukmi despite his many faults. The Lord had bonds of love with both. He did not want to risk, so he observed without a word, his face expressionless. Lord Balaram sat Aniruddha and Rukmavati aboard a fine new chariot. Lord Krishna's family did not lament as they all went to Dwarka, their home, for malice to their lord was all Rukmi had ever shown. Before you start, Shashi, just a couple of points I'd like to make. First of all, you may have noticed that this verse was repeated twice about how all the queens wanted. It was repeated once, I should say. It appeared twice. All the queens didn't want to let anyone else rub Krishna's feet and massage his hand and so forth. So that was just an interesting feature of the text. It was the same verse, more or less, twice. It's also interesting to note how this kind of family reunion took place. I hope you understood the nuances here. Remember, Rukmi tried to stop Rukmini from marrying Krishna. And as we read in the part, Rukmini loved him so much that she managed to get out of her brother's grip and marry him. So then Rukmi had told all the kings, if you recall, I will either come back with Krishna dead or I will never come back at all. So when Krishna defeated him, he was stuck there. So he just built a city there and started over again. And that way he didn't ever come back to the other city. So that's where this wedding party took place. So Rukmi's daughter, Rukmavati, wanted to marry Krishna's son, Pradyumna. And Pradyumna was the son of Krishna and whom? Rukmini. Right, so this is very much like the royals of Europe. You know, they would interwed. It's not allowed these days for health reasons, because if you marry your first cousin, it can create disabled children. It's only allowed in Alabama, as far as I know. And I'm just kidding. Anyway, this royal wedding was taking place, and here is Balaram. So if you remember, Balaram was, these are things you're going to talk about, Josh? No, okay, good, thank you. So you remember how Balaram protected Rukmi. It's also very ironic. Krishna was cutting off his hair, and Balaram comes and says, "What are you doing? This is our in-law. Even though he's done something so bad, you should treat him with respect." So he kind of, he was Rukmi's friend in that occasion. But when Rukmi tried to cheat him, then you see what happened. So anyway, these are some of the interesting subtleties. It's natural for every living being to just want God to themselves. Okay. Even the gopis had that desire. But then, when they came together and cooperated, then Krishna filled their desire.
Hare Krishna, everyone. Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity. Actually, I read Krishna book and Kalakant Prabhu's book, and I liked many points, but I'd like to share a few points with all of you. The first thing is, I liked the Kunti, Queen Kunti offering her prayers to Krishna. And like when Krishna visits Hastinapura and he meets all Pandavas and everyone is so happy to see him that he visited. And then he goes and visits Queen Kunti and she's also very happy. And then she offers her prayers. She says that when you sent Akura, my brother, to gather information about us, then only I understood that there is no possibility for us being in danger. Like we are protected by you because you remember us. And she says like these lines. I'm going to read those lines. Even ordinary devotees who simply think of you are always immune to all kinds of material danger. And what to speak of ourselves who are personally remembered by you. And she also says that as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you are equal to everyone and everyone can take advantage of your special protection. The fact is that although you are equal to everyone, you are especially inclined to the devotees who always think of you. The devotees are related to you by ties of love, and as such, they cannot forget you even for a moment. You are present in everyone's heart, and because the devotees always remember you, you respond accordingly. And here, the relationship between Krishna and a devotee is compared or is related to a relationship between a mother and a child. So I like this a lot. Although the mother has affection for all the children, she takes special care of the one who is fully dependent. So here we should understand that our goal of life is to be fully dependent on Krishna. Like the perfection of a devotee is when he is fully dependent on Krishna. And he should not have any other material goals. And for example, I can say that the Brajavasis, they are like the pure devotees of Krishna. And on the other hand, like the demigods, they approach Krishna only when they have some problem. And other time they will like, they are happy and not thinking of Krishna. So this is what I understood is the ultimate goal of life is that we should be fully dependent on only Krishna. So this is one point, and the other point is, this is what I'm going to share is, it is related to the Kalindi getting married to Krishna. So when Krishna stays in, I will give you a brief introduction about it. So when Krishna stays in Hastinapura, one day Arjuna goes to a forest for hunting, and he is accompanied with Krishna. So they both go, and Arjuna will be hunting, and then he will be tired. And then they will go to the banks of Yamuna River, and they will be sitting and relaxing. Then they will see Kalindi, the girl Kalindi. Then Arjuna will be, they will be like seeing her, and Krishna says Arjuna to go and ask her, like, what is the reason why you are here? So Krishna goes, Arjuna goes. And Arjuna asks her that who are you and why are you here and how can I serve you? And he also says that I think you are here because you are searching for a husband, for a suitable husband. So then Kalindi says that, my dear sir, I know that you are Arjuna, a great hero, but I want to marry only Lord Vishnu because he is the protector of all living beings. And she says these sentences. I'll read them. My dear sir, I know that you are the hero Arjuna, so I may further say that I shall not accept anyone as my husband besides Lord Vishnu, because he is the only protector of all living entities and the bestower of liberation for all conditioned souls. I shall be thankful unto you if you pray to Lord Vishnu to be pleased with me. Oh, this is the twist. The girl knew it well that Arjuna was a great devotee of Lord Krishna and that if he would pray, Krishna would never deny his request. So the important point is that to approach Krishna directly may sometimes be futile, but to approach Krishna through his devotee is sure to be successful. So what I learnt is, we are like so insignificant that we cannot please Krishna directly. So if we please Krishna's devotees and if we serve them, then Krishna will be pleased by us. You know? So that's why we accept gurus so that we get a connection to Krishna through the gurus. We follow the spiritual master. And I want to give one example. In the Govardhan Leela, when Indra didn't know that the small kid was the supreme personality and he flooded the whole Vrindavan, and then Krishna got so angry on him. But Indra wanted to ask forgiveness. But Indra did not approach him directly. What he did is, he went through Surbhi cow. Surbhi cow, she is a great devotee of Krishna. So when Krishna saw Surbhi cow, he was very happy and he was in a mood on that happiness. And then Indra, he hid behind Surbhi cow. And then when Indra realized that, okay, Krishna is so happy, then he asked forgiveness. And then Krishna told, okay, fine. Okay. So what you should learn is, okay, the best way to approach Krishna or to please Krishna is to please his devotees. Am I going fast? Okay. Then one more point which I want to mention is, this is related to Krishna marrying Satya, the king of the daughter of King Nagnajit. So, actually, I'll give a brief introduction here. King Nagnajit, he wanted to get a husband for his daughter, and he kept a vow that a person who should marry his daughter should win against the seven bulls and only then marry his daughter. So when Satya was very much interested to marry Krishna, and when Krishna asked King Nagnajit that, hey, I want to marry your daughter, he says that you should please as formality you should win against the bulls. So then what Krishna does is he divides himself into seven forms, and each form will be fighting with one bull. So here Krishna dividing himself into seven is very significant. It was known to Satya that Krishna had already married many other wives, but still she was attracted to Krishna. In order to encourage her, Krishna immediately expanded himself into seven. So the purport is that Krishna is one, but he has unlimited forms of expansions. He married many thousands of wives, but this does not mean that while he is with one wife, the others were buried with his association. Krishna could associate with each and every wife with 100% association. So we need to understand that everything and anything is possible for Krishna. And so since he is so perfect, he can do anything. Then after this, I'd like to share one more point. That is regarding the Krishna killing the demon Bhaumasura. So... Actually, I'll tell you the story. First, Bhaumasura, the demon, he was like harming everyone. Like he was like causing so many troubles to all the people and all. And then he stole the earrings of Aditi. Aditi is the mother of Indra. So then Indra got so angry and he goes and complains to Krishna that see, this demon is doing so much. So then Krishna gets angry and he goes along with Satyabhama to kill to attack Bhaumasura. So then Krishna will attack Bhaumasura and he kills him. And then after Bhaumasura dies, actually Bhaumasura is the son of Mother Earth. So Mother Earth will appear and she offers her prayers to Krishna and she returns all the umbrella and the earrings of Aditi, and she also gives a jewel. So okay, and then Krishna takes them, and Krishna also he saves the 16,100 princes who were kidnapped by Bhaumasura. He relieves them, and then Krishna, he will take the earrings and all, and along with his wife he will go to Indra, like Amaravati, where Indra lives. And he returns the earrings, and when Indra sees that, he'll be so happy that Bhaumasura died and all. And then he returns the earrings, and then everyone is so happy. Then what happened is, Satyabhama sees a Parijata tree, okay, in Amaravati, and she uproots the tree without asking anyone. She uproots it and she takes it with herself. Actually, she takes that Parijata tree because Krishna would have promised her before, like this, Krishna had promised her to give a Parijata tree to Satyabhama. So she takes it. But now Indra didn't like this. So he says, he opposes Krishna. Oh, why did she take this? So Krishna says that I want to please my wife. So he lets her take. And then Indra and other demigods, they are very angry now. And they go against Krishna. But ultimately Krishna wins. And Satyabhama takes the Parijata tree and keeps it in her palace garden. So, and then Indra is so unhappy. Okay. Now here I like two important points. First point is, why did Krishna take Satyabhama when he was attacking Bhaumasura? Is my question. So, there are two reasons for it. Okay, first reason is because Krishna wanted Satyabhama to take the tree with her own hands. And the story of the Parijata tree is that long ago Narad Muni, he gives a Parijata flower to Rukmini, and then Satyabhama knew about it, and she will feel like, she will feel inferior that why only Rukmini. So, and she tells to Krishna that, where is the flower for me? And then Krishna says that, oh, you just want a flower, I'm planning to give you a whole tree. So that Krishna promises, Krishna promises her about Parijata tree, and he remembers. That's why, this is one reason why Krishna takes Satyabhama. And the other reason is, it is given in Bhagavatam that, Bhaumasura, demon Bhaumasura is a son of Mother Earth. And actually Krishna promises Mother Earth that, I will not kill your son until you give me permission. So, Mother Earth is an expansion of Satyabhama. And he takes Satyabhama because of this reason also. Like, initially when he was attacking Bhaumasura, he didn't kill him initially. He was attacking with all the weapons and he was fighting. And then Satyabhama gets bored, seeing all this. And then she says, okay, now stop it. You should kill him now. It's high time and we'll go from here. So then that means Satyabhama gave him permission. And so Krishna did not break his vow. And finally Satyabhama agrees, and then he killed Bhaumasura, and then they both happily go to Amaravati. So this is one more reason. And the other point is, when Indra had a problem, because of the demon, he went and complained to Krishna. And Krishna helped him, and Krishna attacked the demon and all. But when Krishna took the Parijata tree, Indra was so unhappy and he started fighting against Krishna only. This is too much. So, actually Sukadeva Goswami says these lines, which I want to read. King Indra's behavior towards Krishna was not very much appreciated by great sages like Sukadeva Goswami. Out of his causeless mercy, Krishna had gone to the heavenly kingdom, Amaravati, to present King Indra with his mother's earrings, which had been lost to Bahumasura. When a Parijata tree from the heavenly kingdom was taken by Krishna, Indra offered to fight with him. This was the self-interest on part of Indra. So Sukadeva Goswami mentions that is the way of dealings of materialistic men. Like, materialistic men are always interested in their own profit. For this purpose, like for their own profit, they can like offer any kind of respect to anyone and till their work is done. And once their work is done, they are no longer friends. They are like, they won't help also. So, this is the selfish nature. And he also says that having too much wealth is also makes a person selfish. And having too much worldly pleasures, it is a disqualification to advance in Krishna consciousness. So, we should be... And because it deviates us from our, focus on Krishna, we'll focus on other material things. Okay, and one more point which I want to say is about the conversation between Krishna and Rukmini. When Rukmini wanted to irritate Krishna a little bit, when Krishna wanted to irritate Rukmini a little bit, and he says that I think I'm not fit for you. I think you should marry someone. You should get separated from me and all. And the reason why Krishna says this is, Sukadeva Goswami mentions that the great authority, I'm going to read that. The great authority, Sukadeva Goswami, remarks that Krishna almost always passed his time with Rukmini, and Rukmini was a bit proud to be so fortunate that Krishna never left her even for a moment. So she was little bit proud. So as soon as a devotee becomes, Krishna, however, does not like any of his devotees to be proud. This is most important point. As soon as a devotee becomes so, by some tactic, he cuts down that pride. In this case also, Krishna said many things which were hard for Rukmini to hear. She could only conclude that although she was proud to her of her position, Krishna could be separated from her at any moment. So we need to know that never take anything for granted, you know. if we advance in our spiritual life, we should not be proud about it. Actually, the advancement which we get in our spiritual life is also because of the mercy of Krishna. So we should be very humble, and we should always be in the mood that we should serve the devotees and we should serve Krishna all the time. So with this, I would like to conclude, and thank you so much. Yeah.